You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, what's up? My name is Andre Jick. Welcome back to the Iced Coffee Hour.
Andre.
Wait. Wait.
Millennium.
Wrong set.
Again.
My name is Graham Steffen.
What's up, guys? My name is Andre Jick. Welcome back to Millennial Money. I just sold all my Bitcoin.
Yes.
And I didn't take the offer on the house. Anyway, guys, welcome back. And also, this episode is sponsored by FTX, but more on that later because Jeremy dropped a bombshell on us.
Okay, so Jeremy, you're selling a house.
I'm considering it, 90% sure.
Why 90%?
Well, I think the market's been pretty hot.
Okay.
I'm looking at it. I think, mortgage rates are obviously continue to go up. I think we just hit 5.25 on the 30-year.
That's the highest since 2009, I've read.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
I believe that's slightly higher than 2019. I remember
2009. It's the highest since 2009.
I thought you said 19. Yeah.
2009. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. And I'm thinking about all the equity I could pull out of that right now. And I'm definitely a little concerned about the real estate market. And I don't think this pace of increase is sustainable. A lot of stocks are way down. So I think I'd rather use that money in that.
Now, when you say pull out some equity, you mean just like a HELOC or selling it
and then obviously just, the equity.
Would you ever consider just taking out some of it, not selling it, just taking some?
Not really. I feel like we're getting real frothy in the real estate market. So I feel like gains could be very, very limited starting this summer. The other potential is we could actually have a declining market. I'm not going to go as far to say that, but I just feel like, I feel like we're so richly valued. I feel like properties are starting to get so expensive that I feel like the unaffordability is just getting worse by the minute, it almost seems like. And then you add on these interest rates going up. And I've seen the way, prices have gone up here in Vegas. I'm just like, how sustainable is this? For how long? Wages are not going up nearly as much as real estate's going up. That's an issue. If you're thinking about long-term real estate prices.
What's the average home price at right now, Graham? Do you know?
400.
400?
Yeah.
It's a little higher, no?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, it's a little higher than 400.
No, it's like 401. It's in the low 400s.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. What's your 10%? You're not going to sell it. Why 90%?
I want to hear, what they have to say about specific pricing, how fast they think it can move, and those sorts of things. So they're taking a full look at it. The team is taking a full look at it this week.
Yeah. Too bad you couldn't just give it to Zillow.
Yeah, I know. Zillow.
You know what you should do? This would make a fantastic video. Do an instant offer.
Mm.
If you're not going to do that, I'm going to do that offer.
That'd be kind of cool.
You have like companies like Open Door. That would be a fantastic video.
Oh, yeah.
Don't take it, Andre. My idea. I call dibs.
No. You gave me the advice on the house, so I'm going to try to sell it now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because there's that trend for car YouTubers. I took my Lamborghini to CarMax.
Yeah.
Hold on. My title is going to be Graham Steffen told me to sell my house. That's going to be the title.
That could be good. I like that.
I'm kidding. I'm not going to.
Yeah. I like that. But
my issue with your property, Jeremy,
yes.
I'm going to rail into it right now, yep. is that it doesn't make a good rental. It's like, what do you do with it? I think it's a yeah. fantastic house. I love the location. Mm-hmm. It's in like the prime part of Henderson. I really mm-hmm. like the house itself.
Mm.
But if you're not living there,
yeah,
it doesn't cash flow as a rental.
Yeah, and that's like most of Vegas.
Your best case scenario is maybe breaking even.
Like, yeah.
Wait, how does it not cash flow? You bought it like four or five years ago.
But what he's, I think
for, for a buyer now, like let's just say if he were to sell it now,
right.
And Jeremy even offered it to me. I was like, Graham, do you want to, but do you have an interest? And I looked at the comps. It's like, well, I can't really rent it out to cover my cost. It's just like, I'd be spending money right. every month. And it's not necessarily bad because that's what I was doing in Los mm-hmm. Angeles. For the first few years, I knew that I'd be just basically break even every month, but over time I could raise the rents, and I was bullish on that, and it worked out. But now I don't know how fast rents are going to rise to overcompensate for that. Now, your only thing is that maybe more people from California want to move in and prices keep going higher, because for people in California, they look at your home's value as like, wow, this is a great deal. Los Angeles, this would be double this. And so they don't care.
Yeah, I also worry, you know, because that's like a big bullish thing for Vegas, right? It's like, oh, all these people are going to keep moving here. But I worry about, like, we pulled forward a lot of demand. And that's something that happens in the stock market all the time, where a company might pull forward a bunch of demand, you know, because it's like a hot market or something like that. We had Roni Rona, where a lot of people moved. And I feel like a lot of these companies that I know of are going back to the office. For instance, Apple, for instance, is a great example where Apple employees that maybe moved out are now being forced to come back to Apple locations. Mm. And from my understanding, that if you don't come back and you don't check in a certain amount of days, they'll fire you.
I've seen I've seen that transition starting where the executives want their workforce to go back into the office. So it makes sense if they could start that trend. It's more beneficial for them, but they incentivize people? You think that's going to happen?
Incentivize people as far as what goes? Oh, like getting back to the office?
Yeah.
No, a lot of these companies are just like, they'll just fire you. So, and for a lot of companies that do business international, they're starting to look at it and they're like, we got Chinese workers a dime a dozen in terms of like the wages you have to pay compared to an American worker. And the Chinese workforce is starting to be able to do very technical jobs that weren't done in the past. And so even a lot of these big tech companies, Europe, for instance, Europe, from my understanding, you can get engineering talent that is right on standard with the United States, but for like half the price.
Now, how does that play into, you saw what's going on in Shanghai?
Yes,
the lockdowns. Crazy. Holy crap! How does that play into the narrative? Do you think with inflation, you think maybe becoming worse with supply chains?
I'm worried about that. Yeah, that's obviously not good. And in a time period where if you did have a slowdown all at the same time, oh man, and prices kept going up. You know, I did a video actually like literally an hour before this, and I was talking about the risk of deflation, not right now, but potentially toward the end of this year or going into next year. Because I was bringing up an example, right? And my example in the video, one of my examples was like a standing desk, right? And so let's say you sold standing desks. Your business has been incredible for 2 years. You order all this inventory up. Obviously, not as many people are going to be ordering standing desks now, right? And so if that's your business, right, you're going to have to start cutting price. That's the only thing you can compete on. Or you can start spending way more money as far as marketing goes, which also eats in your profits. So all of a sudden, you can go from a very profitable business model to a company that's losing money.
You're describing Peloton, basically.
Yeah, and Peloton, the sad part is Peloton, compared to most of these companies, had a differentiated product. So they're like way ahead of what most businesses are. Most businesses are very commoditized, right? But yeah, so that's kind of an issue. Not everybody's like an iPhone. So
Jeremy,
right?
Actually, speaking of Peloton, I remember this must have been like 6 months or 8 months ago. We were both talking about Peloton, and this was when Peloton was so hot. Everyone was buying into it. Mm-hmm. And you and I were skeptical, and we said that it was kind of like the Bowflex of yesterday.
Yeah.
How is the company doing since we've talked about it like from a year ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's fallen on a lot of hard times. And not just in terms of stock price, like the actual fundamentals, I know for sure. And I had a short position on Peloton, which I never open up short positions. And I covered way too soon, man.
Oh, wow.
I covered way too soon. But anyways, when it comes to Peloton, the issue is everybody's going back to gyms. And a lot of those, everybody thought like, oh, everybody's just going to want to ride these bikes and whatnot. And now they're just collecting dust. And I remember we even talked about it. It was probably a few months ago. On Millennial Money, I think we talk about them collecting dust now and people putting them on Facebook Marketplace. And, you know, that's just the way it is. And so I don't know, man. But what do you guys think about the possibility of deflation? Not anytime soon, but let's talk about maybe in 23. Do you think that's at all a realistic possibility? You think everything's just going to keep getting more and more expensive?
I think it's going to be until whenever supply chain really begin opening up.
Okay.
I can't see that happening anytime soon.
Mm.
I think we probably got another 6 to 18 months ahead of us, but I don't think we're going to see another 8% inflation.
Yeah.
So Graham, you disagree. Yeah. You're not going to sell a house with Jeremy. You're going to keep all your houses.
I'm selling a rental property right
now. You're selling
now,
one, right? Of,
yeah.
Them.
I'm selling one of them. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know about this. So what's...
Yeah, no, I think
we mentioned it last time,
this.
I think. Yeah. Or
I don't remember us talking about
yeah,
this.
What no, so I had a rental property and it was flooded, basically. The tenant came home and there's like, you know, half an inch of water all throughout the back
that.
Of the house. Yeah. So I'm fixing it up. And when it's all fixed up, mm-hmm. I don't want to re-rent it. Like, it doesn't make sense then to get another tenant. I could. But I would rather just sell it. Yeah.
I figured out your kryptonite.
What is it?
Water.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. No.
Don't get me started.
That's his kryptonite.
Don't get me started. Because water is terrible. Like cleaning up water. It gets to the little baseboards.
No,
and
so your fish tank.
Out.
Your fish tank just recently kind of exploded, or not exploded.
It didn't
but
explode.
Leaking.
Yeah, the seal in the fish tank split a little bit, and yeah, there's 35 gallons of salt water on the floor now. Thankfully, we were able to strap the tank together.
Yep.
I got in touch with everybody. Everyone's been so helpful, by the way. So it's like, this is one of those, like, just a random, unfortunate event. I don't know if this could have been prevented or not, mm-hmm. but everyone so far involved has been, like, so helpful in trying to at least remedy the situation. So now we got
to What do you do
tanks.
To make sure that doesn't happen again?
Getting a metal brace around the aquarium.
Ah.
Just like you suggested, Jeremy. So in most tanks... You see, like, the bottom has just, like, this lip around it, and the top has a little lip around it. This one, I didn't want that, because I wanted it, so when you walk into the house,
be sleek.
It's clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So look in, it looks like you're looking through fish in the living room. Like, that's how I wanted it. But that comes at the slight risk. Now, this shouldn't have happened to begin with.
Right.
But for peace of mind, it's like, you know, I'm going to put the little rim around the top. It'll, you know, not the end of the world.
Yeah, I don't think I told you the time we fed the fish. Enzo hopped on the tank and was hanging off of it. Do you think that was a bad thing? That probably didn't damage
it. How long was
he
hanging on it for?
Oh, it was probably max of like a couple minutes and just doing some pull ups and stuff.
Just standard.
The tank should be able to withstand that.
Okay.
Yeah, because he's not that. How much does he weigh? 100 pounds?
No, like 70.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. No, that's crazy. But so you're selling that property. Why not continue to rent it?
I thought about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought about it because the rents are about two grand a month right now. And I was renting it up until now, basically, at $1,150. I'd never raised the rent on that property for 10 years because the tenant was awesome. And I figured, why not? You know, at zero hassle, always paid on time. I really like the tenant.
Mm-hmm.
So I could re-rent it, but I think at this point, I don't want the hassle. And I don't want, it's just... I don't know. I feel like I've got enough in real estate. I would like to take money out of that area that I feel is probably way more sensitive to interest rate increases during a time where the property's remodeled. Now, if this tenant had just moved out and the property needed to remodel anyway, I'd just rent it out again. But the fact that everything is fixed up in the property, I'm like, I'm getting new floors, I'm getting new bathrooms. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's the time to sell it.
Yeah.
Before someone moves in and has lived there again.
So how would you reinvest it? Let's say you have 1 week to reinvest all that money. What do you do?
Oh gosh, a week? Well, if you had told me 6 months, I'd say probably buying a bigger multifamily. I mean, that's my goal at the end of the year is to buy like a big, I'm talking like a $10 million property, that could be managed, by like some professionals and really go, that's what I really want to do.
Yeah.
But if you told me a week, index funds.
Index funds. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Not Bitcoin?
No,
not
you know what? I wouldn't mind putting like 10% in Bitcoin, Ethereum.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting, real estate, because here we are. I'm thinking about selling a property. Graham is as well. Our old compadre, from my understanding, sold a lot of his real estate. I don't know how much, but a lot. And then you, Mr. Andre, have bought a real estate property. So you're going
to
against,
be fair. To be fair, I didn't buy it when interest rates are at 5%.
That's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I bought it at 2.7%.
So this is the tough part right now with comps, because comping my property is kind of difficult because you're looking back and you're saying, okay, these sales have occurred for like $30,000, $40,000 higher than mine, but they took place 2 months ago when interest rates were significantly lower. Mm-hmm. We're not going to see the impacts of interest rates today probably for another 1 to 3 months.
Okay.
Because anyone right now probably locked in a week or two ago. Not everybody, but some people are locking in now. And it's going to be like this weird in-between for the next few months where we don't know what the real impact is.
Yeah.
Now, you could obviously see mortgage demand that's declining a little bit. Mm-hmm. And refinance demand has declined a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But it's probably going to be another few months, I think, until we see the impacts. But I do think that this opens the door for certain properties in certain locations for sellers who kind of panic, be like, I want to get out at the top of the market, or who think that way, and you're able to go in there and get a good deal and negotiate because interest rates are higher. Yeah. So maybe that means you could finally scoop up a good deal. So that's kind of what I'm thinking.
That makes sense. And Andre, I know in your situation, you also felt underinvested in real estate. Yeah. So you want to get more invested.
Yeah, I figure inflation is going to continue worse than people think.
Okay.
I'm on the inflation camp still.
Okay. So are you saying, like, do you think month after month we're going to keep increasing, or do you think that in terms of like the increase rate, so let's say 8.5%, then we're 9%.
No, not necessarily 10%. Increasing. No. Okay. I mean, maybe, but at the very least holding steady, because I think these Fed increase rates, federal interest rates to the federal fund rate is not enough to fight the inflation that we have going on, especially when you combine it with the fact that we have the war in Ukraine, which is an inflationary pressure.
Yeah.
Especially when you combine it with, the lockdown in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. And supply chain still not going well. Yep. When you combine it with the demand and with millennials coming of age, needing to buy a home, I don't see inflation coming down anytime soon.
Don't you think that some of those things are temporary? We're not going to have a lockdown forever.
100%.
Hopefully we're not going to have a war forever.
100%.
So when you take those things out, I think long term, it might not be as bad.
Yeah, I think if you can take anything in life and say everything's temporary. Like, how temporary is it? I don't know how temporary. It could be the next 3-4 years temporary. I don't know. Seem to think it'll be a multi-year temporary.
So you think the lockdown will be for over a year? You think the war
lockdown. No.
What do you think is going to last
over a year? So speaking of the war, by the way, did you guys see what happened? Actually, who put this out? It was a newspaper from, I think, like the British Times or something, or the London Times. It was about May 9th. So in Russia, I was born in Russia. We have a holiday called the Independence Day, basically, July 4th. But for us, it's May 9th. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of people are speculating that Putin has to finish the war by May 9th because it was to commemorate the victory over Nazis for World War II. And so a lot of people are speculating that Putin has to kind of solve it by May 9th because a lot of people are going to expect for him to announce some victory, you know. So, because he's doing the denazification thing, right?
Wow.
So it's going to be interesting. May 9th is going to be a day to watch out for.
Okay.
But speaking of, but the lockdowns, no, I think they'll continue, but I don't know for how long. But I don't think that's the biggest catalyst for inflation. It's just one of many. Like I said, from demand, from supply chains, everything.
No. Graham, I know you keep up usually really well with savings account rates. Have those started to move up recently?
No.
Oh.
No. You know what? I think the only savings account that increased, I think it was Wealthfront.
Okay.
But I'm looking at Ally. Usually Ally is one of I don't want to say they're the first to cut rates because they pay well.
Yeah.
But I know when the Fed was reducing rates, within 48 hours, Ally was there with that email.
Yeah.
We're sorry to inform you that we are lowering our interest rates. I'm like, they have not done a single thing.
Wow.
Nothing.
And it's online banks that are usually the first.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, part of me, maybe this is their time to finally make a little money. I don't know. I don't know why they're not doing it. You would think that they would do it to be more competitive.
I understand it is they have no incentive to increase it until other banks start increasing it. Then they start competing with each other. Then they increase the rates. But if people are fine keeping their money in their savings account, why would they increase it?
You would think that then that's like a backdoor agreement that they're making. Like, hey, guys, let's not raise rates right now. But let's just enjoy it for 2 months. And
also,
because otherwise, one bank, all it takes is one bank to be like, hey, let's do it. Let's get some customers right now.
Hey, we'd love to thank FTX US for sponsoring today's video. We do appreciate you, FTX, as always. If you're looking to buy Bitcoin, Ethereum, other cryptos with no fixed fees, you can do so by using our first link in the description down there.
They're also one of the largest exchanges by volume, and you can actually buy NFTs and sell them for free.
Plus, you could track over 10,000 different cryptocurrencies and NFTs all in one place. And it's fantastic. The link is down below in the description.
And make sure you use our referral code MMFTX to essentially get a free coin with your first $10 purchased in any cryptocurrency.
Yes, and their debit card is accepted throughout millions of merchants worldwide. So speaking of crypto and FTX, down below in the description, Andre, you made a video about Bitcoin. You made a video about
I was
Bitcoin.
Waiting for the camera transition. What's up?
Anyway, speaking of FTX, you were making a video about Bitcoin hitting a million that I actually watched. I found it incredibly interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, right? A couple people, and by a couple, I mean some of the wealthiest and I would say most intelligent people, some of the billionaires, really believe this crazy theory that Bitcoin's someday going to go to a million. And by someday, I mean as early as 2030, just 8 years from now. And I think on the surface, it sounds like a crazy idea. But if you look at some of the possibilities behind how it might happen, it might actually happen. Because normally people look at like market caps, right? Which for the longest time I used to as well. Mm-hmm. And the way market caps work is, which by the way, Bitcoin's market cap right now is like $800 billion. The way it's calculated is it's taking the last known sale price of Bitcoin, which was whatever, $42,700 at the time of making that video, multiplying it by the current supply, which is about 19 million coins, to get the implied value of $800 billion. And so to get to $1 million Bitcoin, we would need to have a market cap of roughly 20 trillion. So then people take the logic of, okay, well, then we have to roughly 20x the market cap. But the false assumption is that that's how much money is in the ecosystem. But that's not true. We don't need an extra, whatever, $19 trillion to get to a million. We need substantially less. Like if you look at the stock market, for example, Jeremy, I know you know this with stocks and PE ratios and multiples. And so, for example, Apple's market cap's like $2.78 trillion, right? And that's not how much money Apple is or has, right? Mm-hmm. It's not how much technically it's worth. Its price is not its value. And so, and the way again is same exact principle. It's taking the stock price, multiplying it by the outstanding shares in total to get the 2.78. But people pay like 28 times multiple to to invest in Apple. Mm-hmm. And so it's a kind of a similar math that happens in crypto.
Yeah.
People expect what's going to happen. Like, do you guys remember when Tesla bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin? Mm-hmm. Well, they did it at the end of 2020. But the world didn't know about it. That's when they started tweeting about it. That's when Elon asked Michael Saylor, is it even possible to buy $1 billion worth of Bitcoin? Mm-hmm. But that's when the rumor started. The price started to kind of go up. But by February, which was February 7th or 8th, I believe, is when the SEC filing came out and became public. That's when the price was at like 43 or 47,000, whatever it was. It was more than double what it was before.
Yeah.
But again, $400 billion did not flow into Bitcoin in a short amount of time, like in a month. It's just impossible. So you would need closer to like 10%. So it's estimated that maybe 10% of the market cap is actually how much is inside of the Bitcoin ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, needing 20 trillion, we might only need $3 to $4 trillion.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. So 100%. Over the next 8 years, it's possible then having a bunch of catalysts like institutional buyers and, you know, sovereign funds and ETFs, all that stuff.
Isn't that also assume though that the market stays the same, but people aren't going to be like actively selling this off when it hits 100K and like a whole bunch of Bitcoin is going to flood the market all at once, or we hit 500,000, like we hit these big milestones. 420.69, I bet so many people have their limits set to that price. That's going to be a tough one to overcome.
No, that's a great question, because people have been bringing up that same point for the longest time, like since $20. They'd be like, what happens when Bitcoin hits $1,000? How much Bitcoin is going to be sold? What about $10,000? Like that's a great question. I don't know how the market's going to react, but that's been a concern since the beginning of Bitcoin, and it's never something that's been putting the price down.
It does seem like
down.
There's always a bit of retracement when it hits these like 10x milestones, because I remember when it hit about 1,000, it dropped eventually back down to like 300, 400, hit 10,000, dropped back down to 3.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised. Let's say it hits 100.
That's when it's going
to
be a
And then it goes
challenge.
Back down to 30.
Yep. That could happen.
You know, maybe.
But, that could absolutely probably will happen, especially at 100. That's when the psychological barrier comes into play.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you hit it on the nail on the head when it comes to like stocks, because all you need is a lot more buying pressure in an asset than selling pressure to get an asset to go up in price, right?
Right.
If, you know, all the hedge funds tomorrow decided to buy some $500 million market cap, they could easily spike the price hundreds of percent in a matter of minutes, right? If they really want to put that sort of buying pressure.
It's all based on my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeremy. It's all based on the liquidity.
Yeah.
That's really what it's based on. Because technically, like hypothetically, let's say you were like, I'm going to buy one Bitcoin for $100,000 right now. Mm-hmm. Just because I can. No, you know what? Let's make it simple. $1 million. I don't know why I'd spend $1 million right now on Bitcoin, but just because I can, I'm going to do that. Well, temporarily, for that fraction of a second, you would have spiked the market cap up to $20 trillion because that's the last sale price. But the reason we're not seeing market caps fluctuate by the second on exchanges is because they're taking the average of the last known sale prices. They're not taking like the last single one. They're just aggregating the data across all exchanges, averaging them out, right?
Well, what also is going on is most people are selling at like 42. So there's a bunch of orders in for, so you can't even buy a million because your order is going to still go through at 42 because there's a bunch of sellers out there.
How does that work? I'm curious because I have made mistakes in the past where I put in I've mixed numbers around and I put in like a high price and it goes through immediately. I'm like, oh crap, I just overpaid for this. Does that mean that one person received my money way higher than they should have? They placed like a limit order and it just, they got my money?
Yeah, I'm curious. So with the fractional shares come into play, does that stock get split up into fractional shares or is that as a unit that just gets sold off in like its own batch?
Yeah, that goes through the actual brokerage who's doing that.
Right.
So they're the ones that kind of splitting up. They'll hold like the one share, right? And then they'll split it up. So you'll own that fractional share through the brokerage.
But don't they sometimes scalp off the top if they see an order come in and they match it? They give you what you want, but they could kind of skim some off the top. It's not like they're going to be giving that profit to somebody.
He's asking about the difference between the bid and ask. Yeah,
let's say the price of Bitcoin is $24,000, and I mistakenly put I want to buy one Bitcoin for $42,000, and I click it, and it's instantly sold, gone through.
Yeah.
So I overpaid, double.
Yeah.
So where does that extra money go?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't want to, you know, that's a kind of scary subject because then you could blame the brokerage or the exchange for that.
Well, presumably
the
broker would keep it, right? Like that's the
bid. Because if there are, but yeah, I guess so.
That's the bid and ask spread.
That would be the spread and they would just get that excess spread.
Right.
From whatever someone's willing to pay.
That's a great question. I don't know how they would break that up. If there's like some regulatory, like you can't take above a certain percent.
Plus imagine that people have their orders set for like, I'm only selling a tenth. Right. Does that get split up between the people that wanted it then? I don't know. Someone in the comments, I guarantee, knows the answer.
Sure.
Yeah. And we'll comment.
The plumbing system is very complicated.
Well, in stocks, that doesn't happen. You know, if I put in a bid to buy Apple stock right now, 300, it's not going through at 300, it's going at 171 or whatever Apple stock's at right now. So you don't even have to worry about that. Crypto, I don't know. You know, that's kind of wild west with
crypto,
exchanges.
I always
and brokerages.
Put in my price.
Yeah.
It's cheaper just to put it in price. Typically, I'll do it way under. Mm-hmm. A little like, you know, $30 under on Bitcoin or whatever and hope it eventually hits. But every now and then I type in the number and then I click it. And then in between the time I typed it in and clicked it, the price is down like $100 and then I just overpay.
You know what's an interesting technique I've seen people do? They'll set a buy price, like a limit order for Bitcoin at like, let's say $15,000. Mm-hmm. And if Bitcoin ever like flash crashes for just half a second, that just gets scooped up.
But that also means you have to have cash on the sidelines ready to go.
And it would be locked up.
Right, for however long until you cancel it. I have a few on Ethereum, by the way.
Do you really? Yeah. At what price?
Oh, gosh. Like a few dollars. I mean, it's
a few dollars. It's something.
It's something stupid, but I placed the wrong order a while ago and never canceled it.
Like, imagine if you put a $100 limit buy order, right? Mm-hmm. At $1, $2 for Ethereum. And whatever. Let's say there's some system failure or glitch on some exchange. You just bought a 50 right there.
That didn't that happen?
That has happened.
Yeah, when
before.
It went down to like 20 something and it just went right back up. Yeah. Some people got very lucky.
Yeah. Inefficient markets, newer markets.
The problem is it's kind of like the price is right. You can't go too low because if you put in a buy order at 5 and it falls to 6, it's the $6 tier ones that get filled and not yours.
Well, it's a crazy thing with crypto. It's such a new market. There's so much inefficiency. And Sam, you know, the one who founded FTX, that's how he made a lot of his early fortune, if I recall, because there was an inefficiency in something like one exchange would have a different price than this exchange, and he was kind of the middleman there and ended up creating a great business model from inefficiency basically in the crypto market.
Yeah.
So, which is crazy to think about, right?
And I am all for it. I think he's providing liquidity. Not only is he giving demand to the one with lower demand, boosting up their price, but he's also giving more liquidity to the other brokerage who doesn't have it. So I just think,
Yeah, arbitrage is kind of interesting because like on the surface, it sounds kind of like sketchy, but it actually makes markets very efficient and better.
Yeah. Something Bitcoin's going to have a problem dealing with, though, is obviously manipulation long term. And I know there's already been talk about that. But, you know, if you were to talk to gold investors, silver investors, for instance, they will talk your head off about manipulation and how they're, you know, they're always being manipulated and people are buying it, but it's not moving in price and things like that. And so believe me, like I'm sure Bitcoin will have to go through this whole manipulation cycle about being held back and whatnot.
Have you talked to like AMC or GME or GM?
Oh yeah, that's a
GME
whole other level.
Investors.
The difference
in manipulation.
Yeah, the difference between those groups though is those are like new groups, like GME, yeah. AMC. Those are very, very new groups. Gold and silver. Some of those people have been investing in that for 5, 10, 15, 20 years,
right.
And are convinced that, you know, those markets are manipulated.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, every gold person I've ever talked to is 100% convinced.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, all I'm going to say is don't be surprised if that ends up happening with Bitcoin over time. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Oh, it's still happening. It's going to keep happening. But also gold is a $10 or $11 trillion market cap. So
something like that. Yeah.
You know, ideally, as Bitcoin grows bigger, it's going to be harder and harder. Mm-hmm. That's why some people keep actual physical gold.
Yeah.
Which is, I know, one of the reasons why Kevin O'Leary sold a bunch of his gold, because he used to be a huge gold person.
Mm-hmm.
And then he realized, wait a minute, this asset that's supposed to be earning me money is actually staying flat and it's costing me money.
Yeah.
Like, think of how many investments you could make that are going to end up costing you money just to maintain.
Yeah.
Like the storage fees, you know, making sure your gold is safe.
That's why you keep it in your house under the bed.
Yeah, but then that comes with liability and risks of theft and all this. So it's like people that invest in gold, if you want to not be, you know, holding an asset that's manipulated, you have to hold physical gold that you know you're in control of.
Yeah.
But then that costs you more money.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about buying a lot of silver.
Really?
In a silver ETF, yeah. I'm thinking like 6 figures worth.
Okay, so okay, you're a great person to ask because I know nothing about silver.
Yeah.
I've never heard the case for it, like
a lot of the case is going to go similar to gold, right?
Okay.
You're going to have real actual, like, you know, there's a lot of products out there that need silver.
Let me be the grandpa and ask you a simpler question.
Yeah.
Why would you invest, like, if I told you invest in Bitcoin, your argument used to be, well, why Bitcoin? Why not like the billion other ones, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm going to take that same argument, why not buy gold? Why buy the second best?
Yeah, I know. So you could make an argument that I'm making a bad decision and I should actually buy gold, you know. But anyways, silver has more real world applications of like products, semiconductors, and things like that that need it. Gold obviously is jewelry,
gold could be used for electronics too.
From my understanding, they always use silver because gold's just so dang expensive.
Right.
So it's
a decreasing market share. Like it's going down.
That's kind of just a small case. But if you go back to 1972 to 1978, you know, and you go back to some of these periods that we had of maybe much higher inflation, silver performed great during those periods. Gold performed great during those periods. And so I always think, like, it's just funny kind of in the financial markets, like everything has its time to shine, right? And that's just what I've consistently seen. Right now it's real estate. It's had its time to shine. A year or two ago, it was growth stocks, right?
It was Bitcoin.
In crypto, right? And then now it's like value stocks and like safety stocks. Like, why aren't you investing in safety stocks? Like, that's where people are making money or not losing money. And silver and gold hasn't had its day. And
in the 70s.
Yeah. It hasn't had its day in a while.
And did it then again in 2009.
Yeah. Yeah. And it went through a kind of a boom cycle, but it hasn't had its day in a while. And so it's due. That baby's due.
So you think just because it hasn't in a while, it has to again?
That's the way the financial markets work. Everything has its time to shine. Dude. And every time, everything has its time to just get beat down.
You know how I'm equating gold and silver? It's the same way that people think, like, in crypto, there's like cycles, right? Sometimes it's Bitcoin's moment to shine, like you said. Sometimes it's the altcoins. So it's like silver is the altcoin equivalent to gold. Where it's like when people can't afford or they think, you know, gold is too expensive. It's easier to multiply the value of silver just because it's a smaller asset.
I'm trying to think, like, what would cause this to go up in price beyond just wild speculation for no reason? Do you expect that there would be like a demand for silver?
Is no one seeing the hypocrisy the conversation of what we're having? We are using the exact same arguments against like our picks.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bitcoin, it's not just speculation, but you can say the exact same thing. Like, why would Bitcoin go up in value other than pure speculation? You could say that about literally anything.
Well, I think if people lose faith in the dollar
okay.
and they want a global store of value, I could see Bitcoin being that because you don't have the storage costs. You don't have the transaction fees.
No, we get it. We get it.
No, but silver, but I'm trying to understand for silver, like why... Why?
Well, a lot of people, that's been around for longer than Bitcoin,
I know,
obviously.
Why? And so, why
the way that I the way that I understand it is every generation has that asset class that they it resonates with. And for us, it's maybe crypto. And I think for older people, it's gold.
Just to be fair, gold and silver have been around a lot longer than your parents have been around.
Right.
It's been a big thing for a lot longer than
that. But why silver? Like what research leads you to like
I think it's a diversification play. One, you know, let's imagine a scenario. And once again, this is like six figures is not to sound cocky, but that's like a smaller amount of money for me. Right. So it just is. You know, we're not going to say it the way it is. Or what are we going to pretend like this is like a lot of money?
How about this, Jeremy? Give us a percentage. Like you're investing what percentage?
A low percentage. OK, very low percentage.
0.01%.
Is it could low be like under 10%?
Yes, under 10%. If it's six figures, it's under 10%. Like what kind of question is that?
How dare you?
Oh, my gosh.
5%? I don't know.
A small percentage. OK, so anyways, when it comes to this, it's a diversification play. That's kind of the way I view it. It's like you own some real estate, you own some crypto, you own some stocks.
You own a little silver. Stack of silver.
Dude, that's so funny. Like your thought process, this is such a fascinating human study to me because like the way you justify every, like I follow it, I get it. I'm not saying I agree with it or I resonate with it, but I understand it.
Yep.
But it's no different than someone being like, you got to own some Bitcoin, you got to have some Ethereum, you got to have some Doge because 100%. Memes are never going to die. But we have those same arguments against each other. And it's just so funny to watch people bicker back and forth because the template of like what people don't agree with is the exact same against every asset.
I see that. It's silver. Right?
It's Dogecoin. Why would you, I don't know. Like, do you know what I'm saying? But some people get it.
I don't, you know.
Or some of you guys are saying Dogecoin's the same as silver.
Well, yeah. It's a not in the same, like, well, it's not the same asset. I'm saying it's the same concept of, like, the alt version of the primary asset.
Here's the question for you, Andre. Would you rather $100,000 in Dogecoin or silver?
Silver.
Oh, thank goodness.
Really? Yeah, I would.
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. I don't know, man.
Especially right now. 100%.
I don't know. I think the potential is probably, I think there's more potential in Dogecoin,
not in silver. Not
silver. I think is safer.
Yeah.
Like if I want the safe play, then I know I'm not going to lose 50%.
If we were risk on again, then my answer would probably change. But we're risk off right now. So
yeah, but when we're at risk off, now's the time to buy stuff like Dogecoin.
So you heard it here first. Graham saying go all in Dogecoin. You heard it here first, folks.
Which of course you could buy on FTX.
On FTX
down below in the description.
It was all a ruse to get you on FTX.
We want to lead it back there.
I just remembered I've got Dogecoin now. I got a free Dogecoin when I bought Bitcoin in FTX US. So.
How crazy is this that Graham and I swap places? He's going for Dogecoin. I'm going for silver. Jeremy.
Here's the thing. I think with silver, when did I buy silver? I put 15 grand in silver, I think 2 years ago. It's done like nothing. Done absolutely nothing. But I did that because it was everyone was on it on Wall Street Bets. I thought, why not? I may as well. I put 15K in there for fun. I just kept it.
Wait, so it's flat? It didn't even like keep up with inflation?
Yes, but I mean, it's up a little
lagged
bit,
big time.
Silver's done nothing.
It's like up probably 38% in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's just been
so
a
it's bound.
Lag.
It's wound up behind the scenes any day now because it's done nothing.
Jeremy's like the guy who goes onto like a roulette table and he's like, oh man, it's been red 10 times in a row. Next one's got to be black.
That's my strategy and it always doesn't work.
But you know what? Like I could see for you, Jeremy, putting maybe 20 grand in silver.
It's not even worth my time.
But for
it's not even worth me hitting
saying,
the button.
For fun. And then you have
not fun.
The bricks that you could stack as a decoration somewhere and it's cool. Like that's what I would do. Or better yet, you buy bricks of copper and they look really cool and they're really cheap and they're heavy and you could just mess around with it.
I can't. Copper?
Yeah,
what?
Copper.
Oh, jeez.
Tinfoil, man. Yeah, get your tinfoil hat. I just
we're goofing, but like seriously,
what's the play? Silver, baby.
Convince silver at what price and sell at what price? What's it gonna be?
You hold it. You hold it.
For how long?
You buy it. You hold it.
Okay.
For how long, though?
You know what's going to be funny if it actually goes on an epic run?
We should
and we're like,
see.
Silver hasn't moved in 100 years. How's this thing just
dude,
went
we should
up
see like a month from now or like a week from now to see which one did better.
It's got
to
be a year. You can't, I don't think anything you pick right now.
Yeah.
Probably realistically, I would say 3 years would be a good gauge, maybe 3 to 5 years to look back at.
That's
this.
Fair.
Anything can happen in a month or a year, but I think.
Yeah. And gold and silver, to be fair, you know, if we want to bring it back to logical arguments, it's always safe havens, you know, where people like to hide out money. So it always has that kind of going for it, which obviously if you guys, you know, you look at Bitcoin as a safe haven.
Right.
Mainly because it's done well.
Right.
Yes, but think of how
and if it hadn't done so well, I don't know if you guys.
How easy is that going to be for you? You got bricks of silver.
No, you don't have to buy bricks of silver. You buy a silver ETF.
Oh, you don't have silver ETFs.
Yeah,
you're not buying physical silver.
No, you don't have to buy physical silver.
No, but you're buying physical silver.
A little bit. But if I'm going to make a big position, I'll do ETF.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So,
but it's so much cooler to have 100,000 of silver.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
But it's going to be multi six-figure position. No,
is it really?
No, we'll see. We'll see. I don't want to talk it up too much. We'll see what happens. We'll see. I might not even buy it. The price might spike now, and I'm like, I'm good. We'll see what happens.
Felt but,
says the guy that buys cars every other week.
These are good investments.
Oh, my gosh. They're not good investments. Because we're in a bubble, an economic bubble right now, Graham, does not mean it's a good investment. Goodness gracious.
I think there are certain things that are limited that they're not making any more of. That for a, you don't understand the collector market.
Oh, come on.
Do you see what I have to deal with? This
come
right
on.
Here. We are going through the exact same argument templates. Like silver, I don't get that. But cars, let me tell you about that. Great
because, you know
store
what?
Value.
Because cars spark an emotional connection with someone that you cannot get with silver. With a car,
I agree.
You can't, like, if you get a bar of silver, it's not like, wow, that bar of silver is
reminds
perfect
me
condition.
Of my childhood.
That's a mint condition bar of silver. I want one of those. Guess what? They keep making more of those bars of silver. And there's another one that's always more mint than this. But a car, on the other hand, is just...
But Graham. Another company could make the car again.
Like, I mean, the GT40 is a continuation. That's maybe the only car. But then... So the GT40 is a car that... No, I think... That's not a good investment unless someone wants to pay a premium to get to the front of the line. That's
right.
It. But I think some of these discontinued cars, there's a reason,
Graham,
why 60s Ferraris and the McLaren F1 and the original SLS
it's so funny because if I was
Viper just, GTS.
Like,
yeah.
The hypocrisy is hilarious because I could say the same thing about Pokemon cards. I'm like, dude, my Pokemon set has appreciated. And it's like, can't they print more of them? No, because they were released in 1999.
Like, between silver and Pokemon, I'd rather Pokemon. I mean,
I know.
I'd rather like a PSA 10 Charizard first edition than silver.
I agree.
If you're a multi six figures in silver, buy a really good Charizard card.
Dude, seriously,
and
though.
Because
you're you've dipped your toes in
it. Yeah, and I'm going to probably buy more base sets in the future.
Would you consider buying an actual like PSA 10 Charizard?
No. I want to just buy unopened boxes.
Why?
Of base sets. Because I feel like those are just...
They're going to pop off any day now.
I feel like that's,
in a while.
That's the next hot
the
play,
ETF
baby.
Of it.
Oh, my goodness.
Jeremy's like, because I want to sell dreams.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
No one's going to care about your physical cars in 10 years. We're in the metaverse. Your physical cars don't matter. It's all about the digital car. I want your 4 GT in NFT form.
Wow.
That's what
matters.
He's
going meta here.
Yeah. No, so here's the thing. I would not be surprised if one day there's a 4 GT in the metaverse that's worth more than the real 4 GT. I kid you not. I would not be surprised. Do I think that's sustainable? No.
Yeah.
But I would. I think one day that will happen.
Here's a more realistic scenario, Jeremy. What's going to probably end up happening is people are going to convert their physical assets into digital ones by destroying the physical one.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Does that make sense? So they'll create an NFT. So if you want to NFTify your car, you'll have to destroy it.
Whoa.
Does that make sense?
That's way
outside. So you converted its form from physical to digital. And that's how you preserve its scarcity. Because you could print as many digital ones as you want.
You'd have to get everyone on board
You wouldn't have to get everyone on board. If you want the actual legit NFT that has proof that it's now destroyed and it's on the blockchain, that's possible. You don't have to do it to your physical one.
That would be baller.
Right?
Yeah, that would be baller move.
You could start with something small then. You can start with your car, Andre.
Hey, okay, yeah, so I'm getting a new car.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What are you getting, Andre?
I'm getting, don't laugh, what year is it? I think it's 2001 Mazda Miata.
Because Jack bought one.
Oh,
yeah.
The trendsetter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
It's so cool, dude. It is. Okay, so.
Is it going to go up in value?
What? No, so a week ago, I drove the Lambo STO, the Ferrari 488, and the Porsche GT3 RS, right? Like crazy supercars down the track. Mm-hmm. And it's so much fun. It was ridiculously expensive. I paid like $2,000.
Why? You shouldn't have to pay for that.
Why?
Because you just posted on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. I'm not famous like you. No, so I did that, and that was really, really fun, right? And I went in Jack's Miata,
mm-hmm.
and I've driven a Miata before in Maui around the road to Hana.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, dude. The most fun I've ever had in a car.
What?
And I like, it's so crazy because like in a supercar, you have to be going like 150 down the track to like really feel what it can do and have fun. But in a Miata, you could be going 30 around a turn and you feel like you're going 200 top down. It is the most bang for buck fun you will ever have.
Wow.
It's so fun. And it's one of those cars where like I could throw it around. It's a beater. If it breaks, I don't care. I'll fix it. Like it's not that much.
Wow.
Try Lotus Elise.
That'll be the upgrade if I like get tired of the Mazda.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dang, that's cool though.
It's so fun.
Wow.
You know what? Actually, if you want to one up the Miata without going to a Lotus Elise, the Honda S2000.
I looked at it.
Great cars.
I know.
And they're only going up in value.
It's too expensive in relation to what I'm starting.
It'll make you money.
No.
It'll make you
money.
No, if you want to keep it in your garage, yes, it'll make you money.
No,
I don't want to keep it in my garage.
You don't have to. There are cars with 80,000 miles on them that are selling for like $30,000.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. $30,000, I would rather spend less than $10,000 on a Miata and beat it up rather than buy an S2000. Besides, S2000 only goes at the high end when you really pick up speed. A Mazda is fun throughout all the range.
But that's what you could redline it. You could, you know, just rev it.
That's the beauty of the Miata. You could be going 15 miles an hour and drifting and having the blast.
You could do that in an S2000 first gear. You don't see these cars anymore. I think they're great car. I would get the S2000.
No, they're both great. To be fair, the Mazda is at the bottom of its depreciation curve.
Other option is the Toyota MR2 Spyder.
Yep, I looked into that too.
Fantastic, good mid-range in a car.
Yeah. So Graham's mentality is a little bit different because he's buying it more from like an investment perspective, whereas for me, I just want to actually drive it,
which is not smart. We're in a car bubble right now, Grant. you're like, we're in a car bubble. It's all going up, man. Like, and it's for, like that's not
for
sustainable.
Me. Like whenever I see your Ford GT40, it breaks my heart because I'm like, I want to drive that like every day, but it's just like sitting there. And I know why it's sitting because it's grown in value so much. Yeah, like you're scared to drive it. I get it.
It's a work of art.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's not meant to be. It's meant to be driven. It's meant to be enjoyed. You don't drive it.
I do. Once a month, I take it out. Once a month.
Once a month?
Yeah, once a month, I take it out.
I've never heard it leave that
I've
garage.
I've never seen Graham in that car.
Door. I've never heard it.
I take it out once a month.
I feel like I would hear that car.
Usually, no, you don't hear it. It's completely bone stock. The engine is not loud.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a loud car. I would love to straight pipe that car if I could do anything with it, but I want to keep it stock, but I'd love to straight pipe it.
See, that's a perfect example. Like, I want to do it, but I can't because it's going to devalue it.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
No, because I love the original condition. There's something about an original car that is special to me, without tints, without like fancy stuff on it.
Oh, I'm with you.
Yeah.
But I'm not buying it as an investment. I'm buying it to have fun because it's the cheapest way to have the most fun you'll ever
that's
have.
It's a bad mindset, Andre. You should only buy investments.
Just always terrible collect mindset. Money, hoard it, and just die with
no,
a lot of it.
No, buy the S2000 and make money on it. Best
gosh.
Of both worlds, and you can still enjoy it.
But with the Mazda, it's already depreciated. It's not going to go down in value.
No, honestly, I think the Mazda is a great car. I really like them a lot.
I feel like
you
could
do a lot to them.
Would you ever consider getting one?
No.
Why?
I have too many cars.
You said you were considering another one.
Yes. But that's an investment. A Mazda Miata wouldn't, like, I don't drive anywhere. So it's like, for me to get a car, it has to be something that's a good investment.
Why don't we go to the track and drive it, and then you'll see how fun it can be.
I'm sure, but I'm not driving around to the track to, like, go to the grocery store, like, go down the street to...
You have, like, four other cars to pick from to go to the grocery store.
Yeah, but I'm not going to drive that, because if I drive that, I'll drive one of the other cars.
What?
Yeah.
That didn't make sense. I just started.
If I have the choice to drive that, it's going to sit in the driveway. If I have the choice to drive that, I will take another car instead.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't convince him.
No.
Yeah? I have one interesting thing that I was going to say. It was an interesting comment I saw recently, and we could talk about it or not. Yeah. But it's on this whole car thing and like alternative assets. And this guy was making a point. He's like, the only reason a $600 million yacht exists is because people have too much money and they literally don't know what to do with the money. And so I thought that was an interesting subject because clearly you have too much money. You don't even know what to do with your money. You're out here buying cars. And I think it's an interesting subject.
They're good investments. I think you could be passionate about cars. To me, it's like, it's a work of art.
Yeah.
There's something special about certain models of cars that are rare. Mm-hmm. And to be able to, but you're not a car, but like you buy the Teslas,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you've never been into cars.
Yeah,
in a sense, you know.
I know, but it's just like it's such like of the assets you could buy, right? Like let's start it off, okay? If you let's say start having a little bit of money, usually the first thing you might buy is real estate property, right? Yeah. From there, you might start buying index funds or stocks or things like that. From there, you might venture into cryptocurrencies, right? From there, you might venture into start getting into these alternative things. And so the only reason these things have this much value is because people literally don't even know what to do with their money. And that's why like $100 million yacht
because they could afford to take a higher risk on an asset that might not make the money, but they can enjoy it. And that's the same reason people buy art. And I think if you take all of my alternative investments, mm-hmm. it would be probably less than 8% of my net worth.
Okay.
For everything, including the GT, the watches, just all everything alternative like that.
Yeah.
So I think if you look at most people, the majority goes into index funds, real estate. But something
that makes
art,
sense.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I would love a Keith Haring. Like that to me would be, that's one of my like grail pieces is like the original Keith Haring. And I could just... Dude, like
what's
50
price?
To 80 grand.
Oh, 50 to 80? Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Or more. I mean, it depends. Yeah. But I'm talking like a little postcard size thing. I mean,
tiny. Okay.
Because
yeah,
I love a Banksy.
Like,
yeah.
Just any Banksy. That'd
okay.
be awesome.
How much are you talking for those?
I wouldn't buy like an actual one. I don't think I can afford it.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much are they?
Yeah, I don't even. Like,
it depends on what you're getting.
Million?
But there is a company that kind of fractionalized ownership.
Yeah.
Of them. Yeah.
We know about them.
Yeah. But they're not sponsoring us. So.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, speaking of all this, Logan Paul just came out with this new... I learned about this like an hour ago because he was posting on a story. It's called, what is it? 99...
Problems, but an NFT ain't
one. Yeah, something like that. But anyway, I think it's a Polaroid every day. 99 originals. I think it's a Polaroid every day that gets auctioned off.
Oh, interesting. It's interesting. When I did the podcast with him, you know what he does for every guest? He makes them take a Polaroid picture with him.
That's
and
cool.
then he posted on his back.
We should
cool.
have done that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That would have been nice.
Yeah.
And then we could sell it.
Yeah. NFTify it. Burn it. Create an NFT of it. You laugh now.
I couldn't burn something good like that.
You know what?
I don't know.
You know what I was just thinking about? We were talking about all these different things to invest in, right?
Yep.
NFTs. And there's so many dang NFTs.
Yes.
Art. Watches.
By the way, NFT is like at the
cars.
Bottom of the totem pole of alternatives.
Yeah, yeah.
Just saying.
Cars, watches. If you think about stocks, crypto, bonds, real estate, Man, you think about how many things there are to invest in nowadays. It almost keeps assets at bay a little bit in terms of their values because there's so many different things. Because think about it this way, right? You buy, let's say, a $400,000 GT. That's $400,000 you could have put in on a stock, but you didn't, Graham.
Yeah, and it would have been worth $200,000.
Yeah. No, about $10
Miata
now.
With it after. Yeah.
My Miata. Woo!
You could buy like 400 of those.
Yeah. No, but in all seriousness, you could have put that in an index fund, in Facebook stock, whatever, and that money's just not going there. Or in another real estate property. You could have bought a property here in Vegas for $400,000. Probably not a very good property because price had gone up so much, but you could have bought another property, right? So it takes you out of that market. And I will say it leads to less bubbles. The less thing you have to invest in, potentially, the more often you could probably get a bubble. Like imagine stocks didn't exist, crypto didn't exist. Shoot, now we all got to just invest in real estate. Let's say NFTs and none of that existed. I mean, you're more likely to have, a real estate bubble in that sort
of situation.
So you're
doing us a favor by investing in silver by keeping the bubbles at bay.
Yes, yes. Gold. Oh my gosh, I forgot to even mention that. Gold, silver, commodities. Yeah.
That's $200,000 that you could put into Honest Stock.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're keeping the bubbles down.
Yeah, because, yeah. You know, if you put $200,000 into Honest, that would be a bubble.
Yeah.
That's when you know.
Oh, gosh. Anyways. That's
remember
just
when you brought that silver?
That was last week, Andre. We all remember it. It was literally last week, Andre. What the heck? We all remember that. It was 7 days ago.
That was the highlight of the entire episode fun. Was like holding it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I loved it.
Let me hold your Bitcoin. Let me hold your GT. Oh, I can't.
Well, you can hold my Bitcoin.
Oh, my gosh. It feels like millions of dollars. Holy smokes, man. That's incredible.
You'll own nothing and be happy.
Yeah, I know.
Come join the dark side. Yeah.
You'll own fake stuff and be happy. NFT. No, I'm just kidding. No hate.
Is it not ironic in the comment section?
What?
The arguments we make against each other that could all be applicable to literally everything we're buying.
I don't think a 4GT is comparable to silver at all.
No, I agree. I'm
no,
just
it's
saying,
no, yeah. It's comparable to Dogecoin because clearly you're a huge Dogecoin fan, so that's what it's comparable.
So we're
to.
Comparing Dogecoin to silver.
No, now Doge is the GT. They'll both probably lose 50% over the next 3 years. So, what Graham? Once your little rich buddies there start losing money and start losing their businesses because we go through a recession, they ain't buying no more 4GTs.
You know what? Next episode, what I'm going to be curious to ask you about like your upbringing, because like you're such an old soul millennial. I love it. No, it's cool. Graham is too though, but he's a little bit more on the edgier, like newer modern side.
Trendier.
Yeah, and Jeremy's like my heroes are Warren Buffett and.
Well, yeah, I got offended because Peter Thiel came out. Yes. Did you see that?
I saw that.
He was dogging on Buffett.
Yeah, he did.
What did he say?
He's true. He's right,
talking
though.
Mad trash.
I think he's right.
What did he say?
He's trying to make out like Buffett some evil guy who's trying to hold Bitcoin down, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, dude, just because he didn't believe it in
his
past.
No, his main argument was that guys like Warren Buffett have a gerontocracy over finance.
Mm.
He's like, yeah, it's like those old dudes who just like run all the hedge funds of the world who just don't get it.
Which isn't true at all. He's totally. Clueless. He'll make whatever argument is going to appease like people that don't know what the hell they're talking about. And Peter Thiel, you're right, because they have no clue what's really going on.
But don't you think he has a point in the sense that finance has traditionally kind of belonged in the hands of the few and the older?
The older, of course, because that's how wealth works. The older he's always going to collect the...
And the few, that's true, too. The few and the elder.
Right, yeah. But I think that's changing, right? Finance is becoming more democratized. You're seeing, you know, younger and younger billionaires and millionaires. Mm-hmm. That's changing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what he's saying is, like, that's the old guard, and of course they don't get it.
Yeah, he came across very aggressive, in my opinion. Didn't need to come across
that aggressive.
Well,
that's why I would love to ask you about your upbringing, because I'm curious, like, what led to people like that becoming your heroes?
Yeah. I mean, well, with Buffett, I mean, it's a great investor, a great businessman at the end of the day, you know, who I think has earned a tremendous amount of respect. And, you know, Peter Thiel deserves respect as well. But, for those two guys to disrespect each other, well, Buffett doesn't disrespect him. It's more Peter Thiel coming down and trying to knock Buffett down, right? That's just kind of insane. And you shouldn't support that, Andre. You're the same guy that a few weeks ago said, oh, finance YouTubers shouldn't make videos about other finance YouTubers. And here you're sticking up for Peter Thiel coming out and attacking Warren Buffett.
Can you repeat that? Because I didn't understand that.
Wait. What did you not understand?
That last part. You said it so fast.
Okay. A few weeks ago, you were saying finance YouTubers shouldn't make videos about each other.
Right.
And now, are you saying it's okay that Peter Thiel talked in that manner and disrespected Warren Buffett
I just said he has a point in the sense that finance has belonged traditionally to the old and the few.
Yeah, but that wasn't what he said. And that wasn't, you know, the way he addressed Warren Buffett. But
to be fair, perhaps he knows something about Warren Buffett as far as his role in perhaps the slow progression of certain things that we want to have progressed.
Yeah.
You don't know his role in that perspective because you don't know Warren Buffett personally. Yeah. You're not a billionaire. You're not managing trillions of billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to be fair, we don't know what's actually going on.
Yeah. No. But
no, I agree. We shouldn't be disrespecting each other.
Yeah. You know, he came down and I think he just came down way too hard. You know, if you want to disagree with somebody, disagree with somebody. But the thing is, you know, I see what they're trying to do. They're trying to create these guys over here, the enemies. We're the right guys, and it's a great propaganda machine. You know, we're the United States of America. We created the propaganda machine. And so that's what Peter Thiel is trying to create, is a propaganda machine around Bitcoin, which has already been created a long time ago. Bitcoin is its own propaganda machine.
I will say, though, that people on our level of, like, YouTubers, like, we are so much more insignificant than the people at that level.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine if Peter Thiel found out that, like, wait a minute, I tried to get an ETF passed and this was the guy that paid off the, you know, the lobbies and the lobbyists to, like, go against this? Like, mm-hmm. Of course I'm going to call him out.
Yeah.
You have no idea that whether that happened or not.
Yep.
So if that was the case, I could see why that might be justified, because he might be playing a role in perhaps, you know, impeding progress.
Yeah, but you could also say the flip side. Maybe Buffett knows about some manipulation, all types of stuff that, you know, we don't know about. That happens in the Bitcoin markets, right? So you could say that on either side.
No, but a Bitcoin ETF has been pushed down by the banking industry for so long. And I feel like that should be out there. Like a spot ETF of Bitcoin, there should be nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree with that. But that still doesn't come across as the whole Buffett thing. So that's a whole other subject.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you on the spot ETF, though. I mean, it's been so easy now to buy Bitcoin on FTX. That anybody could do it. Why not create an ETF of it?
Right.
That I could go in one of my accounts and buy Bitcoin.
Right.
So I agree with that.
So but here's the weird part, though, is that you would almost have to, like, take down Bitcoin in the sense of, like, right now Bitcoin is 24/7. Like, I can right now buy it on the weekends. Spot ETF, it's like, is it just not trading after a certain time, or is there, like, a weekend where it's like, well, I could buy it everywhere else, but I can't buy it here, and I just have to wait for it to open? It's like, it's going to create some weird dynamics there.
Yeah,
that's such a funny, like, that's a good point, but it's funny how finance is so old and stale that these are the rules we have to worry about.
I would love
you can't buy it on weekends. Oh my God. Like, okay, then change it. Like, it's so easy.
I would love for stocks to be 24/7.
I know. Why not?
Love it. And you just constantly check. I mean, it's same thing as with crypto.
You know what? I think that will happen. And then we'll be the old guys. It's like, back in my day, you could only buy stocks on weekdays.
Yeah, it's weird. Why not? I want to be able to watch.
Well, and I'm sure there was a day when you couldn't do pre-market or after-market. Yeah. And now, obviously, you can buy pre-market, you can buy after-market.
Even more now. Now they've been opening up. Now you can do, like, pre-market.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Well, I'm not up at that time. Actually, I might still be up at that time. What is it, like 3 a.m.?
I don't know what it is.
Okay.
Just wait until they're really creative and introduce the pre market. Yeah. That's really innovative.
And then you're
the night owl
7.
Market. Yeah, yeah. Call it the caffeine, the red eye market.
Oh, yeah. That's me. That's my market. So, but anyways, you know, I think we discussed that whole Peter Thiel disrespecting Warren Buffett enough.
You make a video on it?
No, I'm not.
No,
I'm not. Because it just makes me angry that
my response to Peter Thiel.
you never know. I did the video, and Jeremy told me he was so right. I did a video titled "My Response to Dave Ramsey" on the second channel.
It did really well.
Like 220,000 views.
I saw that.
Views in
did
the
really
first
well.
Few days. And Jeremy's like, you should have posted it on the main channel. I'm like, you're right.
Yeah.
You know what? Jeremy gives me really good advice on that. For when it comes to the main channel video topics, Jeremy will sometimes text me. It'll be 11 p.m. at night. This just came out. Do a video on this. It'll do really well if you get it out tomorrow.
That's cool. Like, I wish I had a friend like that, but I don't.
Yeah.
Well,
he just tells me to buy TTCF and it's always down.
And I always give Graham the best deals. I offered him a Model 3 for a great price.
I should have taken that.
I offered him the house I'm about to sell for probably $150,000 cheaper than what I'm actually going to be able to sell it for now.
For which one?
The one we've talked about, Andre.
What are you talking about?
His
the
house.
Model
3?
The house.
He offered it to me at a certain price, and I did the math on that price, and I determined sale price is fair, but what am I going to do with it? Yeah. I'm not going to move in it. I'm not going to use it as an office, and it doesn't make sense as a rental.
Right.
Yeah. I can't do anything with it. The car, I felt the same way. The car, I felt like, well, it is Model 3, but it's the long-range performance. Mine's just the standard.
That's cool.
I don't need another one. So I should have gotten that. That was it. Yeah. Should have gotten that.
$250K a year, Andre, and you can get in this Jeremy's private group.
What you have to do, Andre, is live in the community, but you didn't buy in here.
Yeah.
Oh,
gosh.
Yeah.
Burn me some more about how I wasn't able to afford it.
No, it's just the square footage wasn't enough.
You could have afforded it. We had determined that all you had to do was basically say you're going to pay cash, and then right before closing, you can get a loan.
Right. If I could get it. I don't think I would have gotten one.
You would have gotten
it. It was too soon.
No.
Yes.
I think you could have done it.
I would have bought it for you.
I was not about to put in all of my net worth into, you could probably do it on a $1.4 million house.
No, but you wouldn't have to. You would just, because you don't have to pay the entire thing. It's just.
Like I said, you've been in the game for so much longer than me at that time, especially. So like I had no idea if my income was going to go up, if it was going to stay the same. And I wasn't about to make such a big bet on a maybe.
Now this might be too big of a question. Do you think you would have been happier having bought a home here after buying your house? Like, just if you could snap your fingers.
Financially, I would have been better off financially.
Here, okay.
Yeah. But I actually like my house a lot, considering how much I paid for it. Like, literally half the price was like $700,000. Mm-hmm. And I think if I'm buying here, that's like, for me, that kind of money is like dream home money. Mm. And I think, for me, I like a different community a little bit better, but you guys know which one I like.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
But yeah.
No, that's fair.
No,
I was just going to say that he clearly doesn't like us.
Yeah, that's probably it.
He didn't mention anything about, oh, it would have been cool to live next to you guys or anything.
We gave you the opportunity to
kiss our ass. That was a good catch 22 you put him in there, Graham. I saw what you did there.
But I have that one regret. I don't want to call it a regret, but... the one house, I think I showed you it, with a huge pool in the backyard that was big, like 6,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. It was $500,000 more than this house.
Wow. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. With the love sign in the backyard?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, gosh. I thought it was that one.
No, I was looking at them at the same time. And that one I got down to 1.9, and this was 1,440.
Yeah.
But I would have to pay for the pool and all that sort of stuff. So it came out to be like 1,550, and that would be about, like, we'll call it 1.9. So different. And I kind of did the math on it, and I was like, well, I don't need something that big. It's more expensive, and I don't get to live next to Jeremy. Mm-hmm. And that was honestly a selling point of, like, having a friend next door. That meant a lot to me. And looking back.
See, Andre.
Especially in a new city, though.
In a new,
right.
But I would have loved the extra space.
Right.
So that's the only thing is now with this place, every room is utilized. It's like this office, the other office.
Do you remember one time I showed you a house that I was considering and you were like, no way, this was the exact house I was considering? It was the one in, called, do you remember that
one? I remember, absolutely.
Okay. You're like, I love that house.
I love that house. It was dark.
It was dark.
No natural light.
I agree. That was the one thing that didn't,
It was a great house. Oh, and that was
your friend's house.
Yeah.
Your buddy, But yeah, so I would love a little bit more space at some point, but it's like the hassle of moving.
But this house is humongous. It's like 4,300 square feet.
It's 4,000 square feet, but you would be surprised how quickly that just gets filled. Where's the extra room? Where is it? Like I want a room for, like, I want a music studio and I want space with
music,
like, a drum.
Studio.
I want a bedroom for each of my cars. Come on, what is this?
No, but yeah.
No, but yeah. No, but yeah.
Wait. That reminds me of the house you toured, and that was a viral video for you back in the day. And what did it have? An elevator lift into the master bedroom?
Yes,
where
for
it would,
a car.
That is the most ridiculous thing. Now, you want to talk about unrelatable, Andre. That was
so
an unrelatable house.
That one,
house.
When I toured the house, they were asking, I think, $20 million or $22 million. Okay. Now, they're on the market for $30 million.
And now they could probably finally get the but they always...
But no, I don't think he could. No. I think that guy, he has a cool house, and he put it up on the market at a price where it's like, if someone's willing to pay him that, he'll move. Mm. But I think he's so attached to the property because he put everything that he has into a property, and that's like his baby is that house. Yeah. So I think he's so attached to it. It's so custom that it would take like some crazy offer.
I think it's kind of gross to have your car in your bedroom. I wouldn't, you know, like you hit some bugs and it's just kind of nasty.
No, but there's a window in between.
Oh, there was.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
I thought it actually brought it like next to your bed.
No. There's a window in between.
Okay, window in between. Yeah. Jeez.
Dang.
Well, anyways, now that's your type of house, Andre.
What?
That's what you want, right? No. 3 bedrooms, 30,000 square
feet. I'm trying to practice gratitude and scaling down, because the more I notice myself making more money and numbers become kind of meaningless, I notice myself my level of base level happiness keeps going up. And I think that's so unsustainable because after a certain point, you're like, I have to pay a lot of money to just be like base level happy.
Yeah.
Whereas I was really normally happy in a 1500 square foot normal house. Mm-hmm. And I think it gets away from you so fast.
Yeah, that makes
so
sense.
So fast. Like I noticed the things that I used to like covet and be like, oh, I need to have it in my life. It made me so happy. And then I get them and it's awesome for like a week or a month or whatever. And then afterwards it's like, what next?
Yeah.
Right. And then it's like,
you got to try a McLaren.
Yeah, I did though. I did. And then I will say though, that I'm the kind of person that actually lives vicariously through others. Like the fact that you guys live your high flying lifestyles is so cool.
High flying lifestyle.
But relatively, think about it. You guys are though.
High flying lifestyle.
No, I know.
That's Graham.
It's so funny because your guys' perspective of what you think is a high flying lifestyle is a different level. I get it. But to average people, yours is already, right? And so, I don't know, man. I love living through others. Like, I can appreciate everything Graham's into. Like, I totally can relate with, like, his obsession and love for the fish tank and his car obsession. Yeah. Like, I love that. It's so cool. And your obsession with
silver.
I have $3,000 worth of silver. I just want to be very clear about that. $3,000 as of right
it,
now.
You've been talking it
like,
up, man.
No,
a lot.
Like I get it. I'm not ever gonna criticize you or think less of you for enjoying the finer things in life. I figured out for myself. I don't need to own that thing to enjoy it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's very few things I'm like, do I really need to own it? Though.
Well, that's an issue. You're talking about the high flying lifestyle. When you start making a lot of money or have a lot of money, you start getting connected with people that have a lot more money than
you. Yes, this is true.
In your lifestyle, you don't even think about it as high flying because you know this person. And
you've adjusted.
Like, yeah, they got 10 houses all over the world and they, you know, their average house is
you're
$20
like,
million.
That's
dollars.
The real level.
Yeah.
And then you get to that level and you're like, oh gosh, now I know billionaires and their yachts. That's what I really need. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's a never ending bottomless pit.
Yeah.
And it's cool. I love people's ambition and passion to get it. I'm not saying like, oh, it's so materialistic. It's not.
Yeah.
I love that. It's cool. I don't need to own it to like love how cool it is.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Graham, your high flying lifestyle.
My $23 all you can eat sushis.
Graham pretends like he's frugal, but he's not.
What do I do? The aquarium, the car's an investment. The aquarium is the only thing that costs me money.
I think that you can justify anything in life
as
an investment.
It makes me money. If I'm losing money, there's nothing that I do that loses me money. The aquarium is something that loses me money, and the food is something that loses me money because I'm spending money on food. But the food is not that expensive.
You're looking at it from,
all you can eat sushi.
You're looking at it from one lens that is very subjective, right? People could say, well, I'm investing in my health. I'm spending so much money on supplements and these things because I'm investing in my health. Or I'm investing in my happiness. I don't care if it's losing me money. I'm investing in different things. So you can justify anything as an investment.
No, but if it goes up in value, and the point was that you buy something,
how is that more important than someone's happiness? Just
because,
like, if I
because
like
you're able to get the same enjoyment out of it, like a perfect example, when I was 19, I bought the Lotus Elise,
okay,
$30K, and I bought that car because it wasn't going to cost me money,
right?
I sold it 2 years later for $30K,
right?
I got the same enjoyment, I got the same experience,
okay,
for free.
Fair, okay.
I like to do things.
I'll give
for
you the
free.
Counterpoint to that.
Yes,
I went to Maui. I lost $5,000 going there, but I had the blast. I had the time of my life.
Done
I don't
card
care that I lost money, but it's a memorable experience that I'll remember for the rest of my life. How is that any less important?
Because you could have done that with credit cards for free, got the same experience, and paid $0.
I know I could have.
Yeah.
I could do it in the future. Yeah, it's not like I threw away the opportunity.
So I'm not saying it's a bad experience, but you could find a way to get that exact same experience for free. And for and
not
for,
all
and
things,
for me,
I think that's the case.
I get the experience of owning a Ford GT for free.
But I'm just telling you, not all things like that in life are like that.
Agreed, and that's why I got the aquarium.
Well, there we go.
The aquarium
so
is
we
the
don't
one
disagree.
Thing. Yeah, but the high-flying life, I'm like, everything is basically done to make
make a $40,000 aquarium is not a frugal thing that you can just discount and say like, well,
but when, you
when look, people spend this much on this, that's wrong.
But here's the thing.
It's okay if I have like a $40,000 exception here and there.
But here's the thing is that when you look at it in terms of a percentage of either net worth or income, it's probably way less than most people would spend on an aquarium. When you look at percentage, and that's something that I built up to over time. It's not like just one day, I spent $40,000 on a grant. That was after 12 years of working and saving and investing to be able to do something like that.
I don't think frugality works in percentages. I think it's objective. You're either frugal and you don't spend much money, or you aren't frugal and you justify things.
To be fair, Graham is the most frugal person I know.
I take the food to go. Jeremy's at a restaurant.
I don't know anybody more frugal than him that as a percentage of their net worth. And frugal, cheap, whatever you want to call it.
Saying Jeff Bezos doesn't live a high-flying lifestyle because he spends such a low percentage of his net.
Exactly. That's just as true. Like, yo, well, I got this $100 million yacht, but who cares? I got $100 bill. Like, okay, dude. Like, that's literally what you're saying.
And it's appreciated $25 million in the past
year. Yeah, exactly. I sold it to Putin for twice that much.
All right, Andre, you have a good point. I'll give you that.
There are calculated expenses that I know I'm going to spend money on.
I think you're a hypocrite. In the sense that you justify what you think is important and what other people think is important. Well, that's not as important because money.
No, because I think there are ways to get the same experience for free.
And that's true.
If I have one thing that's money and one thing that's free and they're like 99% the same thing, I'll pick the free option. Regardless,
I'll pick the option that makes me happiest, even if it loses money.
Well, I get 99%.
Like, for example, perfect example is the Miata example.
Yeah.
I knew that I could buy a Lotus and it'll probably stay the same, whereas maybe a Miata might depreciate a little bit more.
Have you driven a Lotus Elise yet?
Hold on. We're getting too ahead of ourselves.
All right, okay.
I'm just saying, okay. I could purchase it from that perspective, but I only choose to do it from the perspective of if I wreck it, I don't care. That's $6,000 lost, not the end of the world.
No, but that's why you have insurance. The insurance payouts on Lotuses are huge because they cost so much to repair.
Right.
And so if you get your stated value higher than your purchase price, which finding,
I love how he's got an answer for everything.
It's true, though.
I know. It's just funny.
True.
It's funny.
If you get a Lotus Elise and you pay $40,000 for it, you can do a stated value for insurance of $50,000.
But again, you are making a choice that is more financially driven rather than one that what I'm making, which is more purely driven on myself and fun.
But have you driven a Lotus Elise?
I have.
You have?
I have.
And you call that more fun than a Miata only because you wouldn't care if you wrecked the Miata?
The fact that I could throw it around and not care and not be worried.
But
and
so
it's
it is
not
financially driven. It's not financially driven another way.
It's not taking up a headspace in me at all. It's like it's the best because I can have fun without worrying about it.
At the core, it's financially driven for you. It's what am I going to care about less because it's going to cost less money. And the Miata is going to cost less money. So the Elise, if you didn't care about the Elise, which is more fun?
I'm getting the same amount of fun. I would get the same amount of fun whether I bought the Elise or the Miata. I promise.
You promise?
I'd get the same. Because I drove a Lambo STO, a Ferrari 488, a GTR 3RS on the track, and then a Miata.
So
you're telling me that the Lotus is really what's going to do it.
Such a flamboyant lifestyle.
So I've driven a lot of those cars too. Actually, in fact, I really wanted a Gallardo. And this is before I bought one of the duplexes and I test drove the Gallardo.
Yep.
And I went back in the Lotus. I'm like, I have more fun in the Lotus.
Yeah.
It was so much better.
Exactly. Yes. You don't need to spend crazy money to like have fun. But maybe if you wanted a better investment, the Gallardo might have been better.
I will say that, you know, I'll bring in something. So Graham and I I'm not going to mention the name of the restaurant, but we like this one restaurant in town very much.
Yeah.
We go there twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons is, you know what I'm talking about. And one of the reasons is it's if you go there more often, you start taking it for granted. So we try to go twice a year because if you went, let's say we go in once a month, right?
It
loses some
place?
Pizzazz.
Kind of.
It loses some pizzazz, right? Now imagine you go once a week. All of a sudden now it's just like, it's so regular to you, right?
Right.
It's kind of like if you treat yourself to, I don't know, some people like to treat themselves like a Starbucks Frappuccino. If you go to Starbucks every day and get a Frappuccino, it's not a bankroll Frappuccino.
There you go.
It's not special to you anymore. But if you go like once a month or once every few months, it's like, oh, this is like a treat, you know?
So. Yeah, no, I always equate it to like giving my dog chicken, right? It's like if I give him kibbles every day, he's so happy when he gets chicken. If I gave him chicken every day, he'd eat it. But then the next time I'm like, yo, I'm giving you chicken, he's not going to beg for it. And he's so happy and excited.
Yeah.
And I know it's, you know, it's a dog, but our level of happiness works very similar ways. Like your base level becomes whatever you're comfortable at, whatever you live at.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to practice that, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like you said, moderation.
Exactly. And it's easy once you get a lot of money, because then these things that are used to be out of realm, right?
Right.
Like you could go, you know, I remember Alex Hormozi when you had him on, he brought this up and it's a great point. He says, you know, he could go out for an expensive dinner every single night, right? And so no longer do you even respect that expensive dinner anymore. If you eat at a, you know,
right,
a Michelin star restaurant every night of your life, that just becomes the norm, right? And so it's not even like a special experience to you anymore, because this is now your norm.
Right.
So I think that's it for everybody watching this, that, you know, gets to a point where these things become easy to you. I think actually restricting yourself can be really powerful and a great feeling than indulging in those things all the time. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. If you put it in finance terms, Graham, it's like the difference between I can either make more money or save more money. The end result is I'll have more money, but it's the same way. It's like I could either reach for more happiness by having more stuff, or I could moderate it by having less and appreciating what I have.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
That's if you're deriving happiness from things, though. So I think that's
or
a whole other subject.
The accumulation of things, which I think is Graham, is that he likes to collect.
Which I get deep.
It's the challenge of collecting. I love the collection.
Right.
Love a good old collection.
Yeah. Yeah. What I was trying to say is the more stuff I found myself having, the more I think about it, how to protect it, how do I make sure it doesn't get stolen, damaged? Like, how do I, like, it's the maintenance aspect of owning stuff that I think is over time weighs on me. And I can't comment that for Graham, because maybe he has like an infinite capacity to own an unlimited amount of stuff without worrying about it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not like that. Like, if the more stuff I own, the more I'm like, oh, I got to make sure, like, this is do I still have this? Yes, this is safe.
That's why you have people handle that. You hire people that handle those sorts of things.
I was just thinking, you were saying that, and I was thinking of Jay Leno's car collection. Like, who pays the registrations on all of those cars?
Yeah, somebody that handles all that
for him.
Do you remember Mr. Money Mustache?
Yes.
Okay, so one of his, he did a really interesting presentation where he said, let's think about like what it means to be happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, I guess it's like a house and just a house. Like you have a place to live. Mm-hmm. Like, are you really happy yet? No, you need some food and then maybe a fire to keep yourself warm. Are you really happy now? He's like, nah, you probably want a companion, right? So let's add a girl. And he's like drawing stick figures. It was a really cool little presentation. And then he keeps adding more stuff to it. And he's like, are you really happy now? He's like, no, I mean, like, you really need a bigger house, right? You need to upgrade. Mm. All right, let's draw a bigger stick figure house. And so he gives him a bigger house. And he's like, are you really happy now? No, because now you have a bigger house, you have a bigger thing to maintain. You got to hire people, and I got to maintain those. And then he takes it to such an extreme level, like before you know it, he's living in a castle with 50 cars, with 15 airplanes.
Yeah.
And he's like, are you really happy now? He's like, no, because, like, you know, even though you have maids and stuff, let's just keep you in bed. Because now you don't have to do anything. Let's give you a catheter. So now you can just pee while you're in bed. And if you take that level to like an extreme, it's like now you're not living.
Yeah.
You're letting other people live.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually noticed this in myself, like on a small level, in the sense of like I used to cook. Mm-hmm. I love cooking. I enjoyed it. But now it's like a chore and I'm like, oh, I got to like just buy something. And it's way quicker because my time's more important.
Oh, yeah.
And it removes what life is.
Well,
like the little minute tasks that you think are lame is to an extreme level what makes life life. And if you take it to an extreme, like this guy did, then you're just in bed and you're just doing your business in bed. Like, what is the point anymore?
So, you know, there was a lot there, Andre, and there's like a million places we can take that. But right. I'll bring it out like this. You were obviously mentioning, like, you know, time. And, like, you spend time cooking, right?
Yes.
And it's like, I could have made money doing this instead. And, like, this isn't a good use of my time. So I had an issue with that, you know, many, many years ago, where I started viewing my life in kinds of, like I make such an amount of money per hour. And if I'm working, I make this. And if I do this thing, it's not. But then I started viewing it a little more powerfully, where I said, this is worth me sacrificing the money that I could be making over here for this thing, because it matters to me. So if it's like family time, and it could actually become more powerful, because then you know, it's not like it's just free time. You're sacrificing money, but it means that much to you to spend that time with that friend or that family member, or to cook if that's something you enjoy, or going running, right? Whereas to me, I think it's worth even more, and it matters even more to you when you're sacrificing something to enjoy that other thing, and you know you're sacrificing money, right? And to other people, it can mean a lot more. Because if you, let's imagine you have two friends, right? You know, one friend, and let's say you like them both equally, right? They're super nice to you. They're funny, whatever. Charismatic. One friend sits around on his couch all day, right? And has all the time in the world. Your other friend has, you know, businesses and he's super busy, but he's also rich, right? You know, whose time means more to you, right? This guy can spend time with you anytime. This guy's got a very finite amount of time. So you know if he's spending time with you, he really cares about you a lot.
Right.
Whereas this guy's kind of like, I'm ready to hang out whenever, man.
Right.
So I think those are kind of ways to think about it. And I get back to the other point you were bringing.
I follow, by the way. I'm not.
Okay.
I agree 100% with everything you said. It's a great addition to what I said.
Yeah.
Yes.
100%. And then the last part is, you know, you kind of keep taking it back to this thing of like giving things because you have things, it brings you happiness or not happiness, right? And I think that's definitely a rat hole that people can get caught up into. I think for somebody like a Graham or myself or other folks, I think the way we look at it is it's something to do that we think is fun, mm-hmm. right? Is, you know, like for me, I like collecting stocks, right? I like increasing ownership of companies. So I like to still work because I want to get more ownership of the company. I know we can laugh at my stocks right now or Honest or whatever, right? But I want more ownership in those companies. I'm never satisfied. And so for me, that's fun. And I've found a good balance between like family life or friends or whatever you want to call it and still pursuing that. Because at the end of the day, like you could technically, like once you get a lot of money, you could just sit on a beach all day.
Exactly.
But to me, that doesn't sound like a great time.
Right.
Yeah. So that's where it kind of comes back to like what's that right work-life balance, I guess you can say.
Sure.
So, and I know Graham has a kind of similar philosophy because we were talking about this a few weeks ago and you mentioned like what we were talking about, what the American dream is. And you mentioned freedom, like the power to do what you want, when you want to do it and things like that. And I thought that was pretty powerful.
I think we all want the same thing. We all want freedom. It's just how we want to get there is different. And what we view our freedom to be as different and like the circumstances that we want to find ourselves in,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, what do you want to be free from?
Yeah.
For me, it's free from stuff, free from just stress, free mm-hmm. from like needing to work for someone else, like basic core concepts that are staples, I'm sure, in many people's ideas.
Yeah.
But everything you said, I agree. I'm not in disagreement. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
100%.
But I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where like the idea of everything you've said, it works in theory, but not always in practice as mm-hmm. as practically as you'd think, right? I don't know if you've ever come across that, but like I've found myself hanging out with people and I'm just like, man, like how much is this costing me? And I'm and then I have to stop myself and think like I shouldn't be thinking like this. This is not a healthy way to
Part
think.
Part of me thinks that if you're thinking that way, it's not that fun to begin with.
Like if you're 100%. Yeah. But still, it's like not everything's going to be fun and the most enjoyable thing ever. And
I don't know. Sometimes I think about that, but I'm not having a good time to begin with. But the times where I'm really in the moment having a great time, it's like you don't even care.
Right. But even then, if you're not having fun, it's still sometimes nice to just, you know, hang mm-hmm. out with people, whatever, spend time. Even if you're not enjoying, it's not your favorite thing. It's just mm-hmm. still.
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up. I don't know what to say. How do you want to end?
That's how you do it. Let's wrap it up.
So with that, oh, we forgot to ask people to subscribe in the beginning. Mm. Guys, we forgot to ask you to subscribe in the very beginning. So how about this? Just subscribe really quick. It's totally free. Hit the like button for the YouTube algorithm. Comment down below also for the YouTube algorithm so it recommends us to a brand new audience who could also comment and hit the like button and subscribe. So thank you guys so much for watching. Thank you also to FTX for sponsoring the video. And till next week.
Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.